And now Money Matters with the Lewises, Doug, Linda, and Deborah, owners of Lewis Financial Management, a Raleigh-based financial planning firm providing investment and planning advice since 1983. Doug is a certified financial planner who could answer your questions about investments, retirement planning, and estate planning. Why not call Doug, Linda, and Deborah right now with your investment question at 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-9783. Now, here's Doug, Linda, and Deborah.
Investments offered through SFA, Inc., investment advice through Lewis Financial Management. SFA, Inc. and Lewis Financial Management are not related entities. Hello, North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, certified financial planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with the Lewises, Doug, Linda, and Deborah Lewis. Money Matters has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 30 years. Well, welcome, North Carolina.
Hello, this is Deborah Lewis.
And this is Linda Lewis.
And this is Doug Lewis, and we are the Lewises here tonight again, ready to answer your questions and to address any topics that we think may be of interest.
And congratulations to the German team that we've heard has just won the World Cup.
Yes.
As we were scampering and getting ready for the show.
There were a lot of people either watching NASCAR or the World Cup, and it's been a good day, I guess.
Yes, it has.
Some people lost money. Some people made money.
That's true.
Well, all thanks right. for joining us once again on Money Matters with the Lewises on News Radio 680 WPTF. And much has been happening in the world and in the market, and we're so glad that you're here joining us this evening on the show. If you have a question about your own personal financial planning situation, call us on the open line at 919-860-9783.
And you can also go to our website, dougandlinda.com, or you can call us at the office, 919-872-7000.
And also, we have been giving away free copies when people call and make appointments with us, and we had the pleasure of doing that again this week with a new client, either a copy of The Wealthy Barber or The Middle Class Millionaire, two of our favorite books.
Which book, Deborah, did we give away this week?
Wealthy Barber.
Wealthy
yes,
Barber,
sir.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Good. That's usually the younger ones.
Yeah,
I like the
Wealthy
young-
Barber by Andrew Chilton.
Right. Well, you know, we should state that we are a family financial planning firm. Doug and Linda are my parents, and we've been Lewis Financial Management for 30-plus years here in Raleigh. And we hope you have questions and call in about your own family financial planning tonight.
Well, what's new in the world of retirement planning, Doug?
Well, I was really interested in an article in the News and Observer. Andy Silton had an excellent article on 401k investing mistakes that you are probably making. And I really thought that it was good because a number of things he pointed out that I agree with 100%. Not all of the things, but most of the things, or many of the things he said I thought were really good. He said, for starters, too many investors put a great deal of their 401k allocation into their employer's stock. It's tempting because the employer often offers a generous match. Furthermore, many employees believe that their company has tremendous prospects, making the stock a wonderful investment. In some cases, employees actually feel pressure to support their company by betting their retirement nest egg on their company's stock. What do you think about that, Deborah?
Well, it seems like a very risky proposition.
It is. It is definitely, it's an extremely, in my opinion, an unsound investment practice. Because your salary and any bonus you make are indeed dependent on the company. But if the company hits a rough patch, then you're going to find both your current source of income and your future retirement income may both be in jeopardy.
And I think that's what a lot of people forget is that, you know, while it can feel like, wow, this might be a huge opportunity, this could be more likely than not a huge risk. And if it's more than just your salary that it's at risk, that could be detrimental. So you should avoid this temptation of investing in more than just your company by being an employee. And let's see, there are other reasons.
Debs, let's interrupt this for a second. I think we have a caller dialing in right now.
Wonderful.
We'll take her call and then we'll come back. All right, let's see. Who do we have on the line? Hello, this is the Lewises, Doug, Linda, and Deborah Lewis. How can we help you? Hello? Hello? Is someone on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Oh, good. Hi. What's your name?
Hi. You can call me RF.
All right. RF, this is Doug Lewis and Linda Lewis and Deborah Lewis. How can we help you this evening?
Hi. I'm fairly newly separated and have not spent a lot of time learning about finances as my husband was taking care of all of this. I contribute to my 401k, but I'm not confident that I will be okay in retirement.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. How old are you, RF?
I'm 36.
You're 36. And by the way, I'm very sorry you're going through it. It's a painful situation usually, and I'm sorry about it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Has the divorce been finalized?
No, it has not.
All right. But you are moving forward in a divorce approach.
Yes.
All right. You'll be eventually dealing with something called a quadro or a division of assets. But tell me a little bit about your assets right now. What do y'all have?
Well, we have actually separated most of it. I guess my main question was just in terms of contributing to my 401k or putting in the $5,500 a year for a Roth. Is that, how should I choose to do one versus the other, or should I plan on doing both?
Tell me your income.
About $100,000.
All right, so you're making $100,000. Are you supporting any children?
Yes, two.
All right, so you're supporting two children. You're making $100,000 a year. What have you, what will you come away with, or what are your non-retirement investment assets right now?
Well, I have a chunk of money in savings.
How much do you have in savings?
About $85,000.
$85,000 in savings, all right.
And in terms of retirement, well, I have a 401k and a Roth IRA already.
Okay. But you have no investments other than the cash that's sitting in the CD or the money market account, the $80,000.
Well, we have two investment properties that have not, they have not paid out yet.
All right. But are they going to be sold as you go through the process of divorce and then cashed out, one for you and one for him or something like that?
They'll probably be sold after everything is finalized.
All right. Do you have any idea about how much you'll come away with then on your portion?
Probably about, one will be at least $20,000 to $25,000, and the other at least $45,000.
All right. So you might end up between the two of them with $30,000 and him $30,000, or are you already giving me the half that you expect?
That's the half that I expect.
All right. So you might end up with about $65,000 here. Well,
right.
The two questions that you've got are very different. One of them is qualified money and the other is non-qualified. And what I mean by that is your 401k decision is money that you put aside before taxes. Your Roth IRA is money that you put aside after taxes.
Okay.
And that becomes important as time goes on. There are benefits along the way, and there are disadvantages along the way, and there are benefits at the rear end when you retire, and there are disadvantages when you retire. Each of them has a different set of parameters. But I would say that your 401k, does it have a matching portion?
It does. It matches 100% of 4% of my income.
All right. So 4% of your income, of course, is $4,000 a year at $100,000 income, and they're going to give you $4,000. So that is what I would call a no-brainer. You have to go ahead and do that.
Right.
All right. I would not go ahead and contribute any more than that.
Okay.
To your 401k, I would not.
Okay.
Now, as far as the Roth question, then because you're under 40 years old, I think that's a wise thing to do. But I would make sure that you choose the right types of investments. Now, how much, do you say you've already got a Roth established?
I do, and there's about $80,000 in there.
And what is it in? What are the investments?
Stocks.
Individual.
I don't know which ones.
Individual stocks?
Yes.
Not mutual funds of stocks.
I don't think so. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
I think they're individual stocks.
All right. Well, that's a very serious no-no. That's something you should not do at all. That's a big mistake. If you think of the Roth IRA as a chicken house that contains chickens, it will help you. The most important thing is to understand what are the chickens, not what's the chicken house. And the chickens are where you will either lose money or make money. The chickens are your investments. I like to use that illustration because everybody can understand chickens. Chickens and eggs, it's a very simple illustration. But what you're telling me is you know everything about the chicken house and nothing about the chickens. And that's very risky.
Yes.
And what you're asking is, should you put more money into your chicken house? And immediately I'm going to say, well, what chickens are you going to buy? You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Yes, you should contribute to the Roth IRA, but no, you should not be buying individual stocks in your Roth IRA. Jot down our office number if you haven't gotten it already. Our office number is
919-872-7000.
Okay.
And you might also jot down our website.
DougAndLinda.com.
Okay.
And if you call our office to schedule an appointment, either I or Deborah would meet with you and then actually help you select the individual chickens. In other words, you shouldn't be playing in the stock market.
Right. Okay.
But yes, you have a benefit. Now, do you know what the benefit of having that kind of a chicken house, a Roth IRA, is?
No, please educate me.
All right. A Roth IRA is a container for investments. You already pay tax on them, so they have no tax benefit whatsoever putting your money into it. But what it does do, it allows all of the growth that can occur over the next, in your case, 33, till you're 59 years old, another 33 years, it can grow, and you pay no taxes as it grows, and you pay no taxes on the growth when you take it out. So it comes out tax-free. Now, of course, the portion you put in always comes out tax-free because you already paid tax on it.
Right.
But that's the benefit of it, that it can grow. Now, there are penalties if you try to access it earlier and so on. You've got to wait until you get to 59 and a half and so forth. But it has definite benefits. But the most important thing is, what are the investments that you select to be in there?
The other thing I was going to add, Doug, was, RF, this is Deborah, the 85 in savings and the possible 65 coming from the investment properties, that lends itself to naturally add a third bucket or investment portfolio that you can immediately start to create for yourself.
That's right.
And that's the personal portfolio.
That's right. And we want to start with what are her living expenses and what is necessary as an emergency fund. Do you know what your living expenses are right now?
Well, I'm in a little bit of a unique situation in that I have temporarily moved in with my parents for a year.
Okay. So for the next year, you don't have to pay rent or income
utilities, that kind of thing right now.
I
will be buying a house in a year.
That's another no-no. Don't do that.
Rent first.
Then you're going to be taking on a big debt. You don't want to go in and take a big debt right off the bat. That's not something you want to do. But you do need housing. And I definitely think that you should certainly have your own housing for sure. Each of these items, but the reason that I was tailgating on what Deborah said is that you don't want to keep $80,000 just sitting doing nothing.
You have this benefit of 30 years to create a financial future for you and the two kids that you can never recapture. So if you look at that as one large sum to begin with, and then as we, you know, if we were to meet together and we go through and talk about cash flow and cash flow planning, then it begins to be a whole philosophy that you can, you know, incorporate into financial independence.
Correct. Following the implication or the analogy of chickens, you would have chickens that you own outside of any type of chicken house, the ones that Deborah's talking about, starting with your cash that's there now and what comes in the sale of the real estate. Then you would have another set of chickens, which are investments in your Roth IRA. And of course, you would have a third set of chickens, investments in your 401k. And all of them need to be seen as part of an overall investment strategy. And you need to be educated so you're comfortable that you know exactly what each of your investments is.
Does that make sense, RF? Like,
yes.
Okay, good, good. Good, because the more you can see these as chickens that are one day going to be producing eggs that you're going to be able to comfortably live off of, then the more you'll feel educated and empowered through that education that you've got three different sources of income.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, as, I mean, I think it's great. And I'm, as Doug said, you know, we, our hearts go out to you during this transition, but it's good that you have a support system. Mom and
right.
dad, you can be with them. The kids can feel comforted through this process. But because you're an educated person and because you're working and you have a great salary, then you need some, and whatever the questions are that you have about your own personal situation, jot them down on a notebook or do it on the computer, because if you do go to work with a financial planner,
well, you'll just want to call us tomorrow and set up an appointment.
You need just some direction for the future, because, you know, especially like you said, you have your 401k. How much is in the 401k at the present time?
Only about 12,000.
Okay. And it may be that you want to know, am I in the right vehicles within the 401k?
And that's where everything starts to be looked at from a holistic point of view. But it's good that you're asking all these questions. These are the right questions to ask. Should I invest in my 401k? Should I invest in my Roth IRA? Should I do both? What's the right amount? I mean, you're right on track. These are the questions that all of a sudden become immediately important to a woman who is now going to be in charge of her financial future.
And that's where she needs an advisor. She needs an independent advisor such as ourselves that will be speaking on her behalf, giving her advice about her cash flow, her investments, her, all the questions she has.
Yeah. And I think, and I agree with Deborah that, you know, now's the time since you have this period of time where you don't have to pay rent. Some of the money that you might earmark for your rent can go in a personal portfolio to grow during this period of time.
Definitely give me a call tomorrow. It's 919-872-7000. And, we're right here in Raleigh and very easy to get to.
Does that help you, RF?
It did. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I have one other question. Have you drawn up, did you ever have wills drawn up?
No, we have not.
Okay. And that may be something that you might want to address.
Right.
And also the beneficiaries of the you might want to address that as well. You know, change those so that.
She's got to. That's very crucial.
They're not going to your husband.
There are different rules on 401k and Roth IRA. There are different rules on the beneficiaries.
Yeah, we'll want to discuss that too, and to make sure that you've protected yourself for, God forbid, something happens to you. You want the children to inherit.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Have a good week. Thank you. You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewises on News Radio 680 WPTF. Call us on the open line with your questions about your investments, your retirement plan, your financial planning future. Call us on the open line at 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-WPTF. Well, what's new?
No.
We didn't finish.
That's right.
Retirement
we were talking
planning.
About
yes,
the, actually, it's interesting because we were just talking about 401k
right.
mistakes.
That's right. Okay. And I think the last thing I'd was referencing in this article, and you, Doug, were saying is that it can be very risky to bet on the company and the company stock.
That's right. Never do that. That's one of the no-nos that so many people do. Sometimes they feel pressured. They should do it because to be loyal to their company, never bet on your company stock in a 401k. And I was happy to see that Andy Silton was doing the same thing in his article. Also, along that line, you should avoid the temptation of investing in a sector fund inside your 401k. Maybe something that reflects your profession or your industry, because again, you may love the prospects of biopharmaceuticals, but you're already taking enough risk if your job is in that industry.
That's right. So, someone can be easily tempted to do that. On the other end of the spectrum, some folks sign up for 401k programs and then they let the money sit in the cash option.
Well, that is another mistake, obviously, because if you're going to sit in cash, you might as well not even have a 401k, since the cash is never going to accumulate into anything resembling a worthwhile retirement asset. So that doesn't make sense. And all the surveys that talk about what you should do and how to allocate your risk, how to assess your risk and allocate according to your risk assessment, there's a major flaw in all of these surveys, and that is typically, investors fail to consider their other investment assets before allocating their retirement assets, which is what we were just covering with our last caller.
Very true.
You've got to look at your financial world as if it's one pair of pants with a lot of
pockets.
A lot of pockets, three mm-hmm. pockets, four pockets, mm-hmm. but it's still all one pair of pants, and mm-hmm. you've got to have your allocation according to all of them, and the surveys show that people don't do that.
So, what's another suggestion?
Well, I think a lot of things that are wrong, that mistakes people make in 401ks, are they're making too many selections. Many managers of mutual funds already have 80 or more securities in their fund. So by the time an investor has picked four or five mutual funds of stocks, he's already too widely diversified. And so,
I came across that this week. There was actually someone who came in to see me at the office, see us at the office at Lewis Financial Management. And one of his defaults was to go through and check off every single little box. And so he put in a specific amount, and let's just call it $2,000 there were 20 investment choices. And he said, I didn't know what to do, so I picked them all.
Yeah, that's about as foolish as leaving it all in cash.
Well, so you've taken over-diversification and made it under-diversified now.
That's exactly right.
So you should keep it simple, right?
Yeah, you should, and you should work with an advisor. That's where we come in, and if not us, it should be somebody like us, but somebody who will be advising you. I think you're doing one of those tomorrow morning, aren't
you, Deborah? I am.
Yeah, advising how to allocate your money inside your 401k.
That's right.
You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewises on News Radio 680 WPTF. Thank you for joining us, and if you've got a question, call us on the open line at 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-9783. Let's pause here for a caller.
Hello, Jim.
Yes.
How can I help you? This is Doug Lewis with Money Matters.
All right. I have a trust that's supposed to be started after I die. I'm told that I could have one before I die. Is that correct?
Yes, you can set up trust before you die, and you can set up trust at your death. They're called testamentary trust or inter vivos trust.
All right, and if I open up one before I die, and I set a certain amount of money aside, that money can't be taken out, or can it?
You can do it either way you want, Jim. You can set up a revocable trust, which allows you to put the money in the trust, and then you can revoke it and take the money out again, or you can make it an irrevocable trust where you put your money into the trust and you can't get it out again. You can do them either way. What's your objective, Jim? There are different consequences.
It might be more suitable for me to put some stuff in a trust now.
Why'd you want to put it in a trust?
Just so it'll be safe. I wouldn't be bothering it. I wouldn't be using it for one thing.
You mean sort of keep it out of your hands so you can't be tempted to spend it?
Right.
All right. Well, there are spendthrift trusts, and you can do that. What you want then is you want an irrevocable trust. Who do you want the money to go to?
Well, it would go to my daughter.
I want it to go to your daughter. How about your wife?
Well, I don't have a wife any longer.
All right. What's the size of your estate? Let's talk about taxes for a second, because that's crucial in talking about trusts.
In cash, it would probably be around $40,000. Of course, I've got about $250,000 in real estate.
And that's the total?
I wouldn't want to put the real estate in a trust now.
You would or would not?
I would not.
All right. Well, let's put it like this. If that's the total value of your estate, $290,000, including everything you own, then there's no tax benefit for you to put it into the trust.
There's not.
Because 100% of your estate will be sheltered. On the other hand, if you want to make sure that it goes to your daughter irrevocably, you can start giving it to her now if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, though, you could give her the whole $40,000 because all you're doing is giving up some of the estate credit, and you don't need it.
That would be a gift.
That'd be a pure gift.
Is any tax? Would she be taxed for that?
No. I will say this, by the way. The real estate, if it's growing in value, how old are you, Jim?
59.
Well, you're a young man. If you're going to be around a few more years, that real estate might be growing in value. Sometimes you can go ahead and gift the real estate to the trust, and then you keep the value from appreciating in your estate.
All right. Well, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
I've got some land that I'm going to have to pay a water and sewer assessment on. Comes in the neighborhood of $10,070.
Uh-huh.
Can I get that as a tax write-off?
Paying the assessment?
Yeah, paying the assessment.
Well, let's see. Is the property investment property?
Yes. I bought it for an investment.
I think you might be able to go ahead and claim it as investment expense. I'd want to do a little research and check on that one for you, but I think you might be able to.
That would be federal and state, or just...
No, you'd take it on both. If it qualifies for investment expense, then you'd take it on both, because your state taxes, now you start at the bottom line of your federal and you go up to the top line of your state.
Uh-huh. Okay, I think you've told me about what...
You're sure welcome, Jim. If you'd like any more information, give me a call at my office during the week. My office number is 872-7000,
872-7000.
And I'll be happy to get you some more information.
All right.
Sure, welcome.
Thank you very much, Doug.
Thank you, Jim.
You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewises, and thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Doug, there was a very interesting article about improving your finances and looking at a retirement readiness checklist. What's on that checklist, and what should people be doing, Deborah?
Oh, well, there were 8 items.
There are.
And I really liked the way it began. It said, you know, everything that you do tends to be complicated, and even creating a financial plan is complicated.
That's exactly right.
You know, and that's really what we want to focus on, is that how we can help you, as you're listening to this show, break down your own financial plan into steps that you can take for yourself, and how we can help in that way. So 8 of these important items that you need to focus on is, number 1, optimize your retirement date.
That's exactly right. You need to have an idea of when you want to retire. Nail that down, you and your spouse, so that you know what is that date. And that date is going to be an important number in all of our computations. All right. So then once you've done that, then number 2, I would say, is to assess your in-retirement income needs. Many people make a big error here. They try to get as tight a budget as possible.
We frequently hear that advice, and
Deborah? That's exactly right. That's not what life is all about. You don't work all your life so you can retire.
And clip coupons.
Yeah, no. You want to go ahead and figure, when am I going to go zip lining in Costa Rica?
Yeah, really? I mean, at the very least, you know your cost of groceries is not going to go down.
Right.
So life is going to be, it's going to cost you what it usually cost you in pre-retirement, so know your income needs in retirement.
And when I do that for clients, I like to stress that they make it almost like a fantasy or a desired wish list of expenses. What would you like to spend in retirement?
More time with grandkids.
Yeah, exactly.
Hugs and kisses.
And that's what most people say, is I'd like to increase the vacation or the travel or the time with my family. 3, you need to quantify and maximize pension and Social Security benefits. Here, Doug, what's your best advice?
My best advice is to look at it both ways. If you are really comfortable that you are not interested in going back to the workforce and really looking for another job to meet your expenses, then consider taking the early retirement option, the reduced Social Security, and know that you can still make another $15,000 this year and so forth, adding in any pension income you've got. And then once you have done that, then you can go ahead and take the difference between that number and the expenses that you want to spend during retirement, and then we can go to the next step.
And I think that's probably the best way you can have best use of that guaranteed income.
That's right.
Anything that's guaranteed is going to be your Social Security, your pension, and then after that, you know, you got to make up that difference
with
your
investment income, which is not guaranteed.
Right, right. All right, number 4, determine whether your planned spending rate is sustainable.
I think that's very important. Many people use these false calculators that I really dislike, that say, well, if you spend at this rate and you live 25 years more, your money will last. Well, nobody asks the question, suppose I live 26 years.
Right, right.
Yeah, am I a bag lady? Is it all over then?
Right, right.
Now, your spending rate should not be depleting your principal.
Right.
So when you do your calculations, you should determine whether your spending rate is sustainable against your investment portfolio and not depleting.
Very good.
So that's the fourth one.
Yes, sir.
So the first one is to optimize your retirement date. Second thing on the checklist is assess your in-retirement income needs. Third, quantify and maximize pension and Social Security benefits. And number four is determine whether your spending rate is going to be sustainable. And then number five,
craft a long-term portfolio based on your anticipated income needs.
That's right. Don't go to the portfolio design until after you've done the first four steps. But then you need to design a long-term portfolio that's based on those anticipated needs.
And working with a certified financial planner can help you have a comfort level
that you've covered,
about that you've covered all the bases. Because, you know, as our dear friend, our first caller, RF, you know, you can find yourself in a life-changing event and all of a sudden you're having to learn all this stuff because you didn't learn it earlier, right?
Right. But now, number six, there are a few more things on the checklist.
That's right.
Number six is taxes. Pay attention to tax management. That's always important. And then number seven, of course, is you've got to make sure that you've adequately covered your insurance needs. And Linda, what would you say the last thing on the checklist is?
Attend to your estate.
Right.
And that's your portfolio succession plan.
That's right. So
what
that's
happens,
our checklist.
Because if you should die or you should become incapacitated, what do you want to happen to your financial assets?
That's right. That's right.
You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewises on News Radio 680 WPTF. Call us at Lewis Financial Management during the week. Leave us your phone number. We'll be happy to call you back. Or you can call us in the morning.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say, Linda, a lot of people have been taking my suggestion to call during the show. If you didn't want to call in and ask your question now, it is perfectly fine to give us a call at the office now and leave a message. I'll return your call in the morning. It's 919-872-7000. But also, please feel free to use this time tonight. Call us at 919-860-9783. And Doug, let's talk. Maybe there's someone listening who'd like some information about some of these investments that have been hitting the news most recently.
Well, that is, of course, one of the most asked questions. There's a rush to different kinds of investments. There is a lot of pressure recently for unusual investments. You know,
this article in the the Wall Street Journal or News and Observer this weekend? They had a real good article.
I forget where the article came, but it was about the most dangerous investments.
It was in
the Weekend Investor, which is great. Okay, go ahead.
Well,
Doug, sorry.
The mutual funds that try to emulate hedge funds. And then that's something that's getting a lot of attention. And then there's exchange traded funds or ETFs that use borrowed money to jack up their bets. And then there's these REITs or real estate investment trusts that are hard to unload if you need to get out of one. And then there's structured notes that look more like conventional debt, but can be far riskier. So all these investments have at least one thing in common. They've seen their popularity soar recently as investors are looking for protection from what they consider market dangers, or maybe it's just because the funds are being marketed directly and heavily themselves. But they're also hard to understand, they lack transparency, they're expensive, and they don't have proven performance records.
Well, so far it doesn't sound pretty good. It sounds scary.
It is scary. It is scary. What's scary is a lot of people are going after them.
Okay.
What's so scary.
Okay. What are these types of investments that people are being drawn to or sold?
Well, before anyone goes into any of these unusual investments, you should ask certain questions like, is it clear what the investment is doing? And does it come with high fees? Can you sell it easily? Does it have a proven track record? And the first of the types of investments that I just mentioned are these liquid alternative mutual funds, which typically employ hedge fund-like strategies, but they don't come with the same restrictions. And really, my feeling about these are the strategies are too complicated for the average investor to understand. And I know I read about one advisor, investment advisor in Illinois. He said they can, in his opinion, they have heavy, ugly baggage that they come with. And advisors themselves can't understand them. So I would say don't even consider them.
Okay.
And others say that most of the funds that are out there are pitched by investment firms that don't have more than a six-month track.
They have very little track record. You're right, Linda. And that's another thing that I like to stay away from. Now, the second of these investment types that are out there are the non-traded real estate investment trust, or the non-traded REITs.
Okay. What types of questions should a person ask if an investor wanted to invest in these? Or I guess I should say, tell us a little bit about them first.
All right. Well, lately, these non-traded REITs have been going gangbusters. I mean, they have been attracting a huge amount of money from the investing public because investors are attracted due to their high dividends. Now, the article that you're referring to actually cited that many of them are paying as much as 7% on your investment as an income.
Well, that's outstanding. Where are you going to get that?
It's a wonderful dividend. And then there are the publicly traded REITs that are trading on the stock exchange. They only pay 3% or 4%. Okay. So obviously, that's attracting a lot of investor attention. But non-traded REITs, they can be hard for the investors to get out of. And that's because they're not trading.
Okay.
So because they're not trading, it's hard to get a real valuation until a liquidity event occurs. So your question, Deborah.
Yes, sir.
What questions?
Yes. What would someone ask if they wanted to invest in these? Now, what do you need to know?
I like to know certain things.
Okay.
I like to know, first of all, in the track record of the sponsor who is putting out this type of non-traded REIT, what's the worst case that's happened in any of your previous investments?
Okay.
Yes, I want to know a track record, but you never get a track record on one of these when you're going in because they're brand new. But you can get a track record of previous programs offered by the sponsor. And I want to know the track record of all previous programs, and I specifically want to know what's the worst that's happened in your track record. That's one thing you can ask for. Another thing you can ask for is in terms of the objectives, if you're going into this investment for income, then how long can you expect the income to last?
Okay.
If you can't get a clear handle that you're going to be getting 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever income, then you need to ask yourself again, is this why I'm going into this investment?
Okay.
There are a number of other questions that I think you should ask, but I guess my real advice is you shouldn't do these alone. That's like trying to decide what kind of brain surgery are you going to use to operate on yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
No, these are not for you individually. And you should always make sure that you have a large amount of liquid investments like mutual funds and CDs and money markets before you even approach these.
Okay. So definitely very risky.
That's my story on the non-traded investment REITs.
Okay. How about leveraged and inverse exchange traded funds?
Well, these are leverage ETFs, and they are really risky, and I think you should stay away from them. I don't like ETFs anyway.
You know, it's a fund that's trying to act like a stock.
That's what it is.
It just doesn't.
And now getting leverage on them, borrowing money on them to crank them up and to protect you supposedly on the downside, far too risky.
Mm-hmm. Very complex and
very
and
complex.
Risky.
Yes. How about structured notes?
Structured notes are debt investments whose returns depend on the price movements of other assets like stocks or currency exchange rates. These also very complicated.
Okay.
I don't recommend them for any of my clients.
Okay. Well, it just seems like there might be a need for these investments in someone's portfolio perhaps, but definitely not something you should venture to do alone and without the help of a certified financial planner.
That's right.
You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewises on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you've got a question, call us on the open line at 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-WPTF. And you can call us at the office and leave us a message if you would like an appointment. We'd be happy to assist you with setting up an appointment or at least sending you some information that might help you address your financial planning concerns at this time.
Well, did either you, Linda, or you, Deborah, see an article on how to plan as a widow?
That was an excellent article. And to those of you that are widows or widowers that have lost your beloved spouse, our hearts go out to you. This is a very difficult stage of life, but there is life after the loss of a loved one, isn't there, Doug?
There is. And, of course, when you've been in business as long as we have with some of our clients, well over 20 years, 25 years, some of them, we have seen clients go into this stage of widowhood. So what touched you in the article?
Well, you know, this was a very interesting scenario where an individual, her name was Patricia Nowak, she was thrust into widowhood suddenly at the age of 47 when her husband was struck and killed as he was crossing the street. So she was overwhelmed with grief and the realization that she'd become both the sole parent and the provider for her young children. But her problems multiplied when, just 18 days after the accident, her refrigerator caught fire, burning the family's house to the ground. So, tackling one issue at a time, this individual, who is a public relations executive, eventually restored calm and order to her life. And because of the hardships of the experience, she later dedicated herself to helping other widows of all ages to rebuild their life. And she wrote a book, and it's called The ABCs of Widowhood.
Okay, so what touched you about the book, or this widow herself, or the article that she was it was about her? What was there? The article was entitled "How to Plan as a Widow."
Well,
and of course,
I think the main issue here is many times when a person loses a spouse, there's a thorny question, and that's whether or not you should sell the family home.
I hope the article advised the public who may be reading this article, don't do anything right away.
Exactly what was said.
Good, because our advice has always been that don't make a major move right after you have been widowed. If you can afford to wait, don't make any big decisions for at least 6 months, because you're sort of in a fog for at least that long. But you need to go ahead and organize your finances. And that's when you need to get some financial counseling. That's when you need a financial advisor, a certified financial planner, who's not going to be trying to sell you investments, but going to go ahead and be giving you advice on how
to tackle all these issues. I mean, all of a sudden your life is your life, and you have to take charge, you know, you're seeking advice on many things or just a few things. You need to pick a neutral third party.
You know, in every household where there's a couple, one of the couple is usually the person or the individual that takes care of the finances. One of the couple usually is the one that pays the bills and manages the money, etc. But and it seems that most or many young women take a vital interest in money matters, but those who become widowed at a later age often need financial counsel to make solid choices. And it's advised that it's better not to turn to relatives for this kind of help.
Well, did she give up any pointers, any real pointers for
yes.
those?
Seek advice from neutral third parties.
Good. I like that one.
And widows who own a big family house should think carefully before deciding to sell and move to a small condo.
Yeah, she said, make sure your finances are in order before making any move.
Good.
She says, view housing as an integral part of a holistic planning process.
Good.
And she says, take into account your emotional attachment to things like the family home. You know, don't just get rid of it because you feel the need. You might later feel the loss of that. She says, think through plans to move near, you know, any plans to move there to be near grown children as possibly an opportunity to rent instead of just, you know, selling your house and moving on.
Well,
and
I would say
she said, consult a certified financial planner.
I think that's very good. I think that's very good because there's much more to your world than just your home. You really need to focus more on your expenses, your investment portfolio. Yes, your home is a crucial piece of it, but you need to have an approach that a certified financial planner will have that's holistically organizing everything in your world. Well, that's good. So I'm glad that the article was out there, and I know that's been part of our financial planning practice for many years.
You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewises on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you've got a question, you can join us on the open lines. Call us at 919-860-9783. That's 919-860-9783. And I believe we have another caller.
Well, George, how can I help you? This is Doug Lewis.
Doug, I have a question about mutual funds. What advantage, if any, is there to be had in buying a load mutual fund? And if there's no advantage, why are there so many of them?
The advantage to buying a no-load fund?
A load fund.
Oh, that's real simple. That's like saying, what's the advantage of going ahead and getting a real estate broker to sell my house for me when I can sell it myself? I thought you were going to ask the other question, what's the advantage of a no-load fund?
And well, there is either way. I'd like to know the advantages going either way.
All right. Well, first of all, there is no real advantage of buying a no-load fund or a load fund. There is no real difference between them. That's not the way you look at the issue. What you really want to know is what's the performance and how has the fund with its managers done to make money over a length of time? And that's all you do. You just go ahead and you find if a particular set of managers can make more money for you than another set of managers, then go with that manager. And don't worry about if you had to go ahead and, you know, pay a few dollars to find a broker or a planner to put you into that fund. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Depends how long the money's going to be there, too. If you're going to pay a 5% load on a fund and plan to keep your money there only 3 years, yeah, then that's wrong. On the other hand, if you're looking for but you shouldn't be in the mutual funds if you could be doing that anyway, because mutual funds are for long-term investing, at least 5 years. And over a five-year period, you'll find that 5% walks down to about 0.5% or 1%, and then over a 10-year period, it becomes an infinitesimal amount. The other thing is, most no-load funds have high fees inside the fund.
Yeah, right, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, nobody works for free.
So really, you've got to just forget about that and make the decision on what your needs are and the quality of the fund.
That's right. Look at the managers. Remember, a mutual fund is a group of men's minds who are going into the pit for you on Wall Street, and they're buying and selling stocks, and you're looking at their ability to select and their long-term performance record. Or if it's a bond fund, it's a group of men who are making their decisions on what bonds to buy and what bonds to sell and so forth. That's the whole key to this thing. They never see the load. That doesn't go to them. That goes to the broker or the planner, whoever it is that's putting the money with them.
Do you make recommendations to your clients on which funds to go into?
Yes, I do. Okay. Yes, I do. I'd rather not on the air I don't like to step on anybody's feet.
Right.
But yeah, I track as many of the funds that I feel are good, and I guess every planner has their own special ones that they feel comfortable that have done well over a 5 or 10 or 20 year period or whatever.
And if there's anything we can do to help you with that, you can call our office here in Raleigh at 872-7000, and we'll see what we can do to help you.
Well, be in touch then.
All right. Thank you for calling, George.
Well, that was a good call. You know, there was an article, Doug, about renewed interest in using your home as a cash machine.
You know, it's really strange what's happened recently because people are forgetting 2008. Homeowners right now, they seem to be treating their homes like cash registers once again. Lenders, mortgage companies and banks they're luring homeowners by charging lower interest. So home equity lines of credit, the ones that are commonly known as HELOCs, they're getting extremely popular with lower interest rates. Rates on new home equity loans also have fallen. So the most common reason that borrowers are now giving for taking out these loans, these HELOCs and the home equity loans, is for renovations. And that's fine. Others are using them to cover emergency expenses.
Okay.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with that if it's a temporary. In other words, if you haven't, if you've got a credit line set up in your home, let's say a $50,000 home equity credit line.
Yes, sir.
And you don't tap it, you just keep it there. Then sure, that's fine because it's sort of like an emergency fund for you and you can use it for an emergency expense or maybe something as long as your plan is to immediately build it back up, your emergency fund, your regular money market account, and
okay,
pay this off again.
All right,
that's
so let's
fine.
Say storm comes through, damages my roof. I now have a housing emergency. I can tap my home equity line of credit. I can pay it off. I don't have to go into my investments.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used it appropriately.
And that's fine. Other homeowners are using the money to pay off credit cards, which have much higher loans. And that can be a savvy move also, but it's dangerous.
Okay.
There is a lot of danger here because, you know, a credit card is an unsecured debt. There's no security.
That's right.
Yeah.
They take a bet on you.
That's right. No collateral. But as soon as you move that debt over to your home, now it's collateralized and there is a danger. And the danger is that a drop in the housing market or the price of your home could leave the homeowner owing more money on their property than they'd be able to sell them for. And that's exactly what happened in 2008. And so we are seeing more and more of these. You have to be very careful. I don't like debt. I don't think you should be living a life of debt. That's not what life is all about.
So before signing up, what should borrowers do?
You need to make a realistic assessment of how much you can afford to borrow, when it's going to be paid back. Unfortunately, a lot of lenders right now, they're being willing to loan up to 100% of your home's value. That's wrong.
Right. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he was saying that it was shocking about how much, 100 to almost 200%, you know, when we had this big debacle with the real estate previously, and people are forgetting that lesson.
Yeah, that's when they were giving out what they called the ninja loans.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
No income.
You could qualify for a loan.
No
assets.
Yeah.
No income.
Yeah.
We'll give
So when you're taking on this debt and you're going to use a home equity line of credit, do it with the thought that this is going to be for a one-time emergency expense on the house. Yes, let the house pay for the house and do it with caution.
You know, the thing about it is here we are, we're living in America and so many people out there diligently are going to work. It doesn't matter what age you are, but people have conscience and they go to work day in, day out. They take care of their employer. They take care of their patients. They take care of their children. They take care of their parents. And they work and they accumulate. But sometimes a crisis comes up. Like I got a call from a relative, okay, the air conditioner. They had to pay $500 for this part.
Right. So this is an appropriate solution to that type of problem.
Yeah, this is an appropriate solution. But people need to be aware, right, Doug, so that they don't snag themselves.
That's right.
Into debt.
That's right.
And that's why working with a certified financial planner, a financial advisor, can assist you in looking at the big picture.
That's right.
Because there's nothing wrong with borrowing money.
That's right.
It's just how are you going to pay it back?
That's right.
And you
That's
don't
right.
want a crisis where you can't afford to pay it back. So call us at Lewis Financial Management during the week. Our number is 919-872-7000. Leave us a message. We'll call you back and send you some information
that
will help you.
Yes, absolutely. And also look at our website, DougAndLinda.com. And Doug, any last comments?
There's one thing that I really like. Jason Zweig had an interesting article or commentary in the Wall Street Journal, and he talked about track records of financial advisors. Does your advisor measure up? I thought it was really good because, you know, if you want to know the track record of a mutual fund, you can just look it up. But what about the track record of a financial advisor who is trying to get you to sign up as his advisor? I have to think that investors would want to know, but I don't really think many investors are actually asking for the track record of their financial planner. Now, of course, much of the value of a financial advisor can't really be captured by measuring the track record of his investments because there may be other things like reducing your taxes, planning your estate, your retirement, cutting your debt, adjusting your mortgage coverage. So an advisor can make you a lot richer with all these other things, but still, even though those benefits can't be quantified, there's nothing wrong. And actually, financial planners should not be exempt from telling their clients, their new clients, their prospective clients, how other clients have done, what's the track record of clients in comparable situations, comparable to them. Now, before you hire a financial advisor, then his track record shouldn't just be the result of a cherry picking different types of, you know, the best clients.
Right.
I would say you should always ask to get the results of how have comparable clients, maybe 10 or 20 comparable clients, how have they done over the last 5 years or 10 years or 20 years? And I think that is very, I know that we do that. And I don't think, it's improper at all. I was very happy to see the article that, financial advisors should be encouraged to do this more and investors should ask more.
You know, one last thing before we get off the air. It is so important for folks to address estate planning issues because you never know.
That's right, Linda.
You know, I heard something wonderful. We don't have grace for tomorrow. We only have the moment. There's grace for the moment. So you need to plan if something happens and your moments run out.
Well, thank you very much for joining us again this week, and we will be live next week.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug, Linda, and Deborah Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug, Linda, or Deborah in Raleigh at 919-872-7000. That's 919-872-7000. Or go to DougAndLinda.com and listen again next Sunday at 6 p.m. for more Money Matters with Doug, Linda, and Deborah Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF.